Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's broadcast of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I am the host of the show, and the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. We are one of the best-kept secrets in the tennis world. We broadcast each week some of the untold stories in the tennis world. We try each week to bring you those tennis stories that most of the networks that just don't have the time to cover out there, and we bring forth the news and the relevant information to you each week. We try to give a little more personal point of view of things in the tennis world, and my experience over 20 years of college tennis brings you to this show, and I try each and every week to bring forth college tennis news. I also bring in college tennis coaches and let them tell you about their programs and also about where they're at in the year, in the season, and also bring you up to date with the current relevant college news and information, and there's a lot of it that is going on. If you're listening for the first time today, congratulations, and we always ask that you try to tell a friend about us. So we don't do a lot of advertising. As a matter of fact, we don't do any advertising. We just let you spread by word of mouth, and we believe that's the best form of advertising that we have. And we also have other shows that do come on, so if you are just listening to this show, we'd encourage you to also listen to Parenting Aces with Elisa Stone. It comes on she's actually changing it to Tuesday morning, and it comes on 11 Central Time, and she does an outstanding job of telling those stories relevant to junior tennis. Wednesday is Chuck Creasy. It comes on before I do at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time, and he covers American tennis with Chuck Creasy, and he covers all the relevant issues that deal with American tennis, and Chuck has been pretty heated lately with the college tennis news as well, because it has been all relevant to what's going on with American tennis. And then we also have Holding Court with David McIsaac and BJ Paul out at the Junior Tennis Champion Center out in College Park, Maryland. And we're also going to be adding John Denise of the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association in December. And if you're interested in hosting a show, I would encourage you to write to me at J Haynes Tennis. That's J-H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And I'd be glad to visit with you about what it takes to talk tennis on air. It is you need to be passionate about it, and you need to be able to call people up, and you need to be able to talk on the phone or talk in studio or Skype or one thing or the other to a person about tennis for an hour. And if you listen to my show, you better be able to say a few times. So there it is again. You just need to take good care of that word. Those of you that do have an interest in talking to me for whatever reason, you can call in at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. I'll be glad to visit with you about college tennis. I come from a small college background. I spent most of my time at the junior college, community college level, 20 years at that, basically at that level. I did have some time at the Division I level and spent some time with my summers out at Stanford University. So I feel pretty versed in the college tennis scene. I don't know it all. I don't pretend to know it all. I just have some opinions about some things. And we're going to cover some of those issues today. I don't have a guest today. It is a big time in the college tennis world. We've got a big tournament that's going to go on, and I'll get to that in a little bit. I am going to cover some other relevant news here first before we get to that. And I want to let you know that this last weekend we had some college tennis on TV. I'm sure that most of you did not know about it, but it was on TV, ESPN3. And anytime I get past the ESPN2, I start to think of the movie Dodgeball, which had ESPN Ocho on it, and which was covering the movie, the Dodgeball Championships. ESPN3 delivered 2 days of the third annual USTA Collegiate Clay Court Championships. It was actually called the Invitational, and it was held out at Disney World. Disney World has built a unique tennis center in which they have 10 world-class clay courts. They invited a large number of college teams, college individual participants to come out and participate in this event. It's the largest clay court event in college tennis currently. Years ago, they used to have a clay court championship. It was one of the first tournaments of the year, and it was participated heavily by ITA Division I participants. They had since gotten away from it because there really wasn't any need to play clay court tennis because no one out there in the college tennis world had clay courts on campus. However, it is good to see the return of this event, and I like that it's being held at the end of the kind of the hard court season. It's a good mix to events, and you have these athletes that are able to participate in this event and mix in some extra matches at the end of the season and get some good competition in there. This did receive some television time, which is always encouraging at the clay court events. They did broadcast the last day. They had the men's and women's singles and doubles final on air. They also made it available to computers, tablets. They even had it on Xbox, Apple TV, and Roku, which is a unique, interesting mix of platforms there. As my good friend Dick Gould has said, streaming is the best way to go with college tennis, and I think that he's on to something there. I don't think that necessarily TV is the best way to broadcast a college team tennis match. It's just too much to follow at one time when you've got six singles matches on court and three doubles matches going. How do you follow one tennis ball, a keep score, who's serving where, what action to follow? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to the casual viewer. If you're a tennis fan, particularly a college tennis fan, you can recognize and see what's going on. It's hard, unless you have a split screen on TV, to keep track. However, this was a unique event. This was an individual formatted event, so they could narrow it down to one match at a time, maybe two matches going on at the same time and flip-flop back and forth here. I did not get to see it. I was busy doing something else. I don't even know if my satellite provider gets ESPN3, nor did I see it advertised on ESPN or ESPN2 over the weekend. I know the Tennis Channel didn't promote it and other things, and I say that because I didn't watch a lot of a Tennis Channel over the weekend, so I didn't see it advertised. But this is a shame that you don't see a lot of cross-advertising and letting people know what's going on. I mean, these tennis events have got to utilize the Tony Minnis and his show Tennis Channel's got to grab onto these events and put more college tennis fans in the seats during these times. It's a natural advertising avenue. They don't need to be competing. They need to be cooperating, and I would like to see more of that. Over 30 teams participating or represented at this event on the women's side, teams like Auburn, Clemson, Florida State, Illinois, Miami, Northwestern, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and Virginia Tech. On the men's side, we had Clemson, Columbia, Florida, Georgia Tech, Princeton, and USC. What I enjoy about naming those names of teams is that I've had a lot of those coaches on my show, on our show, or the network show. They've been represented here. We've given these coaches an hour plus airtime here to tell us about their programs and what they're doing out there, and then to see them get even possibly more airtime on TV really is a compliment to all of us and what we're trying to do here and promote what is a great sport, is a great avenue for players to develop and then eventually, hopefully, move into the professional tennis world. It is about development, and that's what we're trying to do, develop players. The interesting side to this is former USTA General Manager of Player Development, Patrick McEnroe, sat in the booth here and commentated on this, and we're glad to see that he's still looking out at player development, even though he has since resigned from that position. I'm sure he still has some duties within the USTA and some involvement as far as a person of interest. I'm glad to see that he's still around. The other thing that's happening in the college tennis world, and we know that a lot of these college teams of all divisions have been busy with a fall schedule. They have traveled to their ITA regional tournament. The small colleges have completed their Super Bowl tournament, their so-called fall national championship. The Division I's have completed their fall regional championships and now are moving to the ITA Indoor Collegiate Championships, and we're going to talk about that here shortly. But with all these tournaments and competitions in which they have been playing, it leads to the end-of-season rankings. And this is a big time of the year for a lot of the individual players that are out there because they like to see their name and their school and where they fit into all this great performance work that they've been doing. I can remember having a group of freshman ladies on my teams there at Lee College anxiously awaiting that date in which the fall rankings would appear so they could see their name and a number beside it so they could see where they needed to go and how far ahead of them their rival was. And that's what drove them to participate in tennis at the end of the fall season through December into January when tennis wasn't really a popular thing to do in the off season. And I can tell you, being here live in Tyler, Texas today, that we've had a semi-cold front come through. It's definitely chillier, and we've got rain. So this would be a day in which we would be indoors working on fitness or doing something in regards to tennis-related team-building activity. And, you know, it's that time of the year where the weather's changing, and you gotta be creative in your approach to practices. So, again, if you want to call in and visit with me, 714-583-6853, that's the number. As far as rankings go, at the NAI level, they do not come out with their rankings until November 19th, and that generally is an individual-only ranking. They do not rank their teams at the NAI level. That is something that I'm disappointed about personally. I think with all the individual rankings that go on in the singles and the doubles at the NAIA level, they should be able to put out a team ranking. They do come up with a team champion at the end of the year, so it would make sense that through the course of the year they would be able to come up with a team ranking on the men's and the women's side, but they do not generally do that. At the Division II level, November 10th is their date, which will put us into next week. They will come out with their rankings, and each division determines when they put out their rankings. At the JUCO level today, November 6th, I believe that's today. Hold on just a second. I've got to check my dates. Yeah, on tomorrow, November 6th. Sorry, I'm a day ahead. Tomorrow, November 6th, they will come out with their rankings. So next week we'll be able to go over the JUCO and the Division II rankings. Division III, which I would go on record as saying, which is perhaps the smartest school system out there. You know, we're dealing with athletes that have decided to forego necessarily their dedication to athletics and then to academics, saying that we choose academics first then athletics. These coaches are on the ball. They actually have their team rankings out for the fall season, and we're going to give those out to you. On the women's side first, we believe in ladies first here. We have on the women's side, we have Emory University as a repeat is what we're hoping for here. Coach Amy Bryant is doing a wonderful job over there, and that group of ladies is working hard, it seems like, in the fall here and been rewarded for what they're doing. Coming in second is Williams, third Amherst, fourth Johns Hopkins, and I say this, a bunch of doctors over there, med students. I know there are other kids that go to school there, but Johns Hopkins at fourth, and then number five, the three-school program, Claremont Mud Scripps, coming in there at number five out in California. On the men's side, Division III here, Amherst, Claremont Mud Scripps, Trinity out here in Texas, San Antonio, which is nice to see. A good friend of mine, Coach Butch Newman, who one day I hope will come on the show. Trinity University there, making a return back into the top five. Middlebury, number four. And then number five, Washington University in St. Louis, which is always hard for me to figure out here. I mean, I understand the directionals, but we've got Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. There's California University in Pennsylvania. There's Indiana University, Purdue University. I don't get all these, but that's for the presidents and the Board of Regents to decide. I just tell you like it is and report on them. So it's good to see the rankings coming out. As I mentioned, these kids are anxiously awaiting these, coaches as well, to kind of see where they fit into this grand scheme of things. And nice to have the information out there and then, you know, then the off season begins. I know that November Thanksgiving time, this is off season. These coaches are now limited on the practice time that they can have outdoors with their kids. Some as few as 8 hours a week total to get to see the kids. So that really cuts back on the on-court time and what you can do with the kids. Individual practices usually can stay the same. Encourage your kids to hit a lot of balls while giving them privates, whether it be privates for singles or privates for doubles, and encouraging them to play some practice sets and maybe enter some individual tournaments now and through the course of the holidays. Now, we've got, and then let me, and I don't want to forget this because this leads into today's big story, which is the National ITA Intercollegiate Indoor Championships being held up at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, where the U.S. Open is held. Division One on the ball, they have released their individual rankings for the fall. And I'm going to give you the top five from each, men's and women's, and then the top three doubles teams. And then we're going to talk about that big tournament that's going on up there and let you know what's going on, because that tournament actually starts tomorrow and runs through the night, and we want to make sure that you have all the details leading into that tournament for the weekend. The number one women's player currently for Division One is Jamie Loeb. Jamie is from North Carolina. Number two, Robin Anderson from UCLA. Number three, Haley Carter from North Carolina. Number four, Beatrice Capra from Duke. And number five, Julia Elbaba from University of Virginia. Number one doubles team, Ruth Jensen from Alabama, and Jensen from Alabama. Number two, Loeb and Carter from North Carolina, and then Albuquerque, Rio Bueno from Miami. The thing I noticed particularly about the women's rankings was is how heavy it was in the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference, and it means there are going to be some strong battles in that conference, particularly on the individual side. We know that typically the Pac-12 is deep on the team side, but individually I would look for some tough battles out there on that, and indoors as well. Those teams do particularly well at the indoor tournaments and indoor competitions. And we'll go over that in just a little bit. Again, if you want to call in and talk to me, call in at 714-583-6853. On the men's side, and the number one player in the men, Mr. Julian Lins. Julian hails from Baylor University, and this is exciting for Baylor University. Baylor, if you remember or you don't remember, is going to host the NCAA Division One championships this year, and they are would be extra excited if they had a top player, and I would bet he's going to be one of the top players there, playing in front of the hometown crowd, trying to bring home an individual title, maybe even a team title with that as well. Number two, Yannick Hantman, and Yannick's from USC. Number three, Alex Alvarez-Llamas, and he's from Oklahoma. Mitchell Frank at number four, Virginia, trains out at College Park, Maryland. Number five, Saren Hess Olsen. Saren's from the University of Texas. Glad to see the Big 12, glad to see the great state of Texas represented in this. Two outstanding programs there. I will admit that neither one of them are Texan, but we'll claim them for the time being. And then also the Big 12 kid from Oklahoma, Alex. So three Big 12 players there. Number one doubles team, Libidus and Reese from Tennessee, Kopinski and Gregorian Guignon from Illinois, Gotti and Sood from Oklahoma State, and you'll have to forgive me if I butcher their names. I mean, I'm a small-town kid from Texas, so my international tongue is not well-versed in pronouncing those names. But, you know, in a lot of this individual stuff, I guess the thing that surprises me, and it's as you cover this, it's at the end of the year you see the Pac-12 in the mix for the team championship, but in the course of these individual rankings, they're really not prevalent. On the women's side in particular, not one in the top five or top three doubles On the men's side, you do have the number two player from USC. The other thing is the SEC not really represented real well in either ranking. Alabama has the number one women's doubles team. Tennessee has the number one men's doubles team. But everybody knows that that conference is a very deep and stout conference, and they do an outstanding job of pulling in the teams in the spring semester. And so I would be very wary of what's going on in that conference just because they don't have ranked players in the top five. If I went on to the top 10, they would be there. I just pulled up the top five today just to kind of give you a look at what's happening out there, which does lead me into the 2014 USTA-ITA National Indoor Intercollegiate Championships, and I'm glad they call it the Intercollegiate Championships. It's going to be played November 6th through the 9th, like I said, at the Billie Jean King Tennis Center, which is in Flushing, New York, if you don't know, if you don't ever watch the U.S. Open. It's a 32-player singles draw and a 20-team doubles draw for the men and the women. And I'm a little confused by the 20-team doubles draw. I mean, if you're going to have 32 singles players, can't you get 32 doubles teams? I mean, don't you think you would find 32 schools that would be willing to send teams out there? I mean, how about, I mean, if you just were to open up the draw, 8, 16, 32, would it be that difficult to run a tournament with 32 singles players on the men's and women's side and 32 doubles teams on the men's and women's side? Is it really going to add that many matches? This is the fifth year it's been held there at the home of the U.S. Open. You can get an automatic bid if you win one of the 12 Division I regional championships. You also, if you're a winner of the Small College Super Bowl, if you're a quarterfinalist at the ITA Men's All-American Championship, and I don't understand why the quarterfinalists get to go on the men and the semifinalists from the women at the Riviera All-American Championships. You get the consolation champions and doubles finalists from both All-American events. Doesn't it seem a little weird? I mean, I don't. Why do the men get a little more favoritism there over the women? Doesn't anybody notice that? I mean, if you're a quarterfinalist on the men, you get to go, but if you're a single semifinalist for the women, you get to go. So four women miss out on the opportunity, and four men get to go. Hey, lady coaches, don't you realize that? I mean, or lady players? Anyway, those competing, it showcases eight of the top 10 players from the men's rankings. 26 different colleges and universities will be represented. The women's singles draw features six of the top 10 players. 20 schools represented in the women's singles draw. Last year's champion, Jamie Loeb of North Carolina, is back to defend her title. Like I said, that indoor feeling. She's 3-1 in 2014-15. She's had a 53-4 freshman campaign last year. Not bad for a young lady that's only allowed to have 25 dates. 53-4. A pretty good campaign. She just won the singles consolation draw at the All-American Championships. That was a year after she won that same championship as a freshman. She lost her first round match to Megan Manassi of California, who was ranked 43rd. Seated second is UCLA's Chanel Van Nguyen. She reached the final of the All-American Championships. Haley Carter, teammate of Loeb's, is seated third. Brooke Austin is seated fourth and Manassi fifth. Carter seated is third in the rankings, if you remember. Teammates 1 and 2, I wonder if they play each other. That's going to be fun at practice. Doubles field is comprised of 20 participating tandems from 18 different schools. Clemson's Beatrice Gumilia and Jesse Rumpies are ranked 8th, but they're seated 1st. They won the doubles championships at the ITA at the Riviera. They defeated the number 1, the number 6, the number 21, and number 40 doubles teams en route to that title. Second seeded is Auburn's Plyn Bergmans and Emily Flickinger, the 6th-ranked team. They lost in the semifinals for the number 1 seed. For the men, a new champion will be crowned. None of this year's participants have gone all the way at Flushing before. Only 2 players that are decorated from last year's, Alex Alvarez-Yamas of Oklahoma and Jared Hiltzik of Illinois. They return. They made it to the semifinals. The number 1 seed is Louisville's Sebastian Stiefelmeyer. And what he did is just short of incredible. At the St. Francis ITA Men's All-American Championships, he won 3 matches in the qualifying draw to advance in the main draw. And then he beat 6 ITA preseason-ranked players, including number 5, Hess Olsen from Texas, and Hanfman from USC. That's quite a run when you think about it. 9 matches. I mean, if you did that at the professional level, you would win a Grand Slam, and then you would win your next 2 rounds at the next tournament before losing. That's quite a run. So joining him, Mackenzie McDonald, Julian Lenz, and Romaine Burgerts Forrest, those are the next 3 seeds, Mackenzie 3, Julian 4, and Romaine at number 5. Now, McDonald has an 11-1 record this fall. Lenz is 3-1. And Bogerts is 4-1. The double field is led by Hoffman and Roberto Kuros of USC. They're 4-1. They lost to the number 1 doubles team in the country at the ITA All-American Championship. Columbia's Ashok Narayana and Max Schnurr, the reigning indoor intercollegiate championships, are back in the draw, ranked 6th. They're unseeded. I don't know who the tournament directors are or what, but they really should reconsider that. Roberto Cid and Sasha Guzon of South Florida seeded second. And then you could go on and on about these Division I players. You can see that it is a big deal. I mean, we're getting the top players in the country all out at the USTA Center. They'll be surrounded by what I hope are large numbers of fans, college coaches, hopefully some professional eyes watching them, giving them some words of encouragement, less criticism, more words of encouragement. And then you know me, I am probably the only guy in America that would talk about the small colleges and what they should be doing out there or are doing. So we definitely know that ESPN will not cover any of the small colleges. We know that the Tennis Channel doesn't seem to know that small college tennis really exists, although Tony's doing a pretty good job of getting some small college Division I's out there. But just so you know, the small college champions are participating in the event. They get an opportunity to travel out there and participate in the draws. At 32 singles draw on the men's side, Armstrong State's Fernando Bagajo gets an opportunity to play Oklahoma's Axel Alvarez Llamos, the number 6 player in the country, the number 1 player at Oklahoma, gets an excellent opportunity here, first round, to knock off a Big 12 number 1. And I hope he does it. Because then after that, his draw will open up. If he can beat that one guy, he might just make it to the quarters. Who knows? I still look forward to the day that one of these small college kids wins that tournament. Doubles. It's Embry-Riddle's team, Jaime Rios Sanchez Canarez and Jamie Znack play Wichita State's Tomislav Grigorovic and Teo Stojic. Another good chance. I know the Wichita State coach isn't going to like that. I think I know that guy. But another good chance. Small colleges come a knocking. I have an opportunity there to knock off some pretty good teams. On the women's side, we've got Lynn University's Valentine Confluonier. I still can't say her name. I mean, I look at that name. Seems so easy to say, but it's really not. And she's playing Lynn Chi from Cal, and I would say, you know, probably good luck on that. Finally get to see that. And I've looked at this before. These Pac-12 people, they're just going to knock her off like a fly. And in dubs, we've got Barry University's Linda Erschlin and Eunice O'Neilia versus Notre Dame's Quinn Gleason and Monica Robinson. I would say good luck in that one, too. Notre Dame's tough. Not going to have much of a chance there. But on the guys' side, I think we got a chance, a legitimate shot here to knock off some Division I opponents. And I think in the end, that's what it's about. Give us a chance. Give us a chance. If you know anything about me and the program that I run here on the American College Experience, it's that we enjoy the interdivisional play, and I cannot emphasize that enough. The ITA is called the Intercollegiate Tennis Association for a reason. The more times that you can get intercollegiate play, In other words, when you can mix up the divisions, when you can give hope to these other kids that have been looked or passed by these Division I coaches, that they might have a chance to beat or mingle with these Division I players that they have grown up with and looked up to all of their lives, you promote tennis in general. We're not saying that we're better. We're not saying that we are of the same level. But what we say is that we're striving to be that type of player. And if we can learn through your example that we may one day, somehow or the other, knock you off. And if we continue each and every day to put forth our best efforts, that one day we may get an opportunity to meet you on that playing field and just roll up our sleeves and cooperate in competition to bring out the best in each other and help each other out to reach a new level. And that's what we're looking forward to here. Think about it, ITA. You've got 12 spots in that doubles draw in which you could have had more teams participating, and you just missed the boat. The New York tourist industry, not that it needs any more help, but missed out on another 12 hotel rooms on both the men's and the women's side. 12 times three meals a day. You just missed the boat. Why? Because you didn't want to sit around for another 3 hours a day watching these matches, or what was it? I don't quite understand what it is that David Benjamin and those people are doing up there. I mean, if it really is intercollegiate tennis, then why aren't you doing your best to promote intercollegiate tennis? I mean, you have a small college championship, which you claim is one of the largest tennis events in tennis, and then you run off and you hide behind Division I's for the rest of the year. You run regional championships, which is a small college level, dwarf all of the Division I's. You make more money off of small college participation than you do at any Division I level, and yet you don't embrace that idea of inviting them, more of them, to participate in your events. You're going to get more TV time because Division I's are participating, and that's your wonderful idea, which, you know, you can't argue that people out there are going to love to see certain college tennis matches. I can only imagine that the 1,000 or the 5,000 people that want to watch USC play UCLA on TV would love to see a Coke commercial, or love to see Chevy drive a truck around for 30 seconds on their TV. But it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Not in the spring when you have these opening weekends, not to invite four small college teams to participate in this and make it a true weekend where you compass out these draws and you get everybody three matches while they're there. You compass out this draw and make sure that everybody gets a ton of matches while they're there. It just blows me away into the lack of thinking into the competitiveness of tennis. While you've got all these people around and you end up getting a true ranking or a true sense of what's going on, and shame on you for not looking at that and having a vision with where you're at and what could be and what should be. And I think a lot of times we miss the boat in that regard, and there should be more opportunities for people to participate, and more tournaments, more thought-provoking tournaments in which interdivisional play is encouraged. And you say, you know what, the hell with these athletic directors. They don't understand tennis. They don't understand what it's about, and that the levels are really interchangeable. And you know what, I don't care if it's a Division II program playing a Division I program. That's what it's about, because the levels are basically the same. I'm in it for the competition and good matches. And set an example out there. Try to encourage it. Years ago, the Division I footballs would play Division I AA, and nobody raised a fuss about that. Some schools still do it, and yet if a Division one place at JUCO, it's like, oh, well, you can't do that, and you shouldn't do that, or whatever. And the tennis coaches just agree to it. And that should be another shame on you, you know. You'll recruit the players, but you won't play the teams out of fear that you may lose. And that's just irresponsible. One, irresponsible that you can't recruit better players, and two, irresponsible that you don't promote tennis. I guarantee you this. You take some of these Division I coaches and you put them in the JUCO divisions and let them recruit JUCO rules, and they would get out of that division very quickly because they couldn't do it, because they just couldn't handle the resources or the communities or what have you. But you take these JUCO coaches and you put them in Division I world, and you might find out that the JUCO coaches are much better coaches than these Division I used car salesmen. And it's a shame that more people don't recognize what Billy Pate's done and how he began down there at Georgia Perimeter and say, you know what, maybe I should give somebody like a Dash Cannell or a Brian Nelson a chance, or Jaime Don Juan down there at Laredo, because these guys do more with less. And they don't ask for a lot else. And, you know, these Division I coaches, they keep going back and ask for more and more and more. And we need this, or we need that, and we got to get this, and we got to get that. And not the case down there at the small college level. These coaches are content just to get to go, just to get to travel, just to get to open balls, just to get to practice. I can tell you on my Facebook page, some of them are just excited that it's a sunny day and get to practice. And it's a shame that David Benjamin sits up there in that office and doesn't get out to some of these small college campuses more often to see what the excitement is about. What's the excitement about over at Jacksonville College today at 2 o'clock? What's the excitement about at North Central Texas College today? I don't know. David Benjamin's never been there. He would probably never get out of his office to go there. What's going on at Washington University in St. Louis today, David? I don't know. He's never been there. He's never visited that campus. See what I'm saying? When you have a dictator that dictates from an office, it doesn't really help much. You can't really get a feel for things. You need somebody that's willing to get out there and get his elbows dirty and get his hands in the dirt and see what's going on. And, you know, maybe you guys will wise up one day and realize that you're just missing the boat. So I hope that you'll get after it. Listen, that's all I've got for today. I hope that you enjoyed what I had. I want to let you know that next week I've got Coach Billy Power coming in. Billy, a friend of mine from my Tennis Tech days here in Tyler, Texas. He started a brand new program up at Texas A&M Texarkana, an NAI program, and I talked to him just yesterday. He's got some interesting situations going on up there, so we're going to visit with him about that. And if you can today and the weather's good, get out there and hit some tennis balls and try to have some fun with it today. If you're traveling, coaches, I want to wish you the best of luck up there at that intercollegiate championship. If you're not traveling today, sorry you missed that plane ride. And remember, you can always listen to other podcasts that we have, subscribe to us on iTunes. Listen to the other shows. You know, currently we're up to 1,400 hours worth of tennis interviews. And then we've got right at about 300,000 downloads. We're getting close to it. I don't remember exactly how many it is, but it's unbelievable. I mean, when we started this thing 3.5-4 years ago, we had one hour. We had one listener. And now it's just amazing to me that we do what we do. And just want to thank you all for listening, for participating, and want to wish you the best as you travel through your week. Try to stay warm. Thanks so much for listening today. Bye-bye.